Okay, we might get started in the interest of time. I've got an interesting presentation today on how to make workers' compensation fit for growth. There's a paper with this one too, which has been a really interesting read. There was three, Chris Manning, Ashish Sharma and Anders Jensen-Ward, who are the authors of the paper, and we've got two of them here today to present to us. Ashish is a Sydney-based director with Strategy And, aligned to the financial services practice. Ashish has 18 years of consulting and industry experience in Australia, Southeast Asia and Middle East. Within financial services, Ashish is focused on insurance. He has supported leading public and private insurers on growth, cost out, operating model design, change management and capability transformation agendas. Anders is an engagement manager with Strategy And, aligned to the financial services practice in Sydney. Anders, has almost 15 years of strategy consulting and industry experience in Europe and Australia. He specialises in corporate strategy, mergers and acquisitions, cost out and operational transformations in the general insurance industry, and has helped numerous leading insurers to become more customer-centric, efficient and agile. Welcome, Ashish and Anders.
First of all, really a big privilege to be here. Thank you. Thanks. And look forward to sharing some of the insights that Anders and I have sort of acquired through osmosis and stumbling our way and trying to find how to tell insurers to be better at this product and otherwise long tail in general, so to speak. So just by way of quick context, when we were working at a leading insurer, we felt that despite a lot of good talk around customer centricity and efficiency, there is a still need for a holistic approach on how insurers should approach both cost out, or whether you call it a claims outcomes, or efficiency and effectiveness all put together. And that was sort of the genesis of our paper. If I just skim through the key messages that we wanted to cover this through today is that we wanted to take a step back and look at the workers' comp market in Australia, and for that matter overall, how that is evolving and what's happening in there and what are the key trends we see. Again, we are not actuaries, so pardon us if we are not being very specific in terms of claim frequency and, you know, average claim size and the sort of nitty-gritty of it, but more broadly taking a big picture of what you see in the market. We have seen through our work great privilege to see how the workers' comp schemes sort of stack up across the states, and we had some observations that we'll want to share and discuss with you and get your feedback onto it. And at the same time, then if you combine all this together and look at the profit picture, you do see in some pockets there's a good money being made for the insurers, which is why at least in non-state fees they exist. But also at the same time, there's a clear rising trend in both underwriting expenses and claims indemnity costs that we want to understand why. And then in light of all this, we wanted to take a step back and say, so what should insurers do? Which I think also equally applies for regulators or scheme agents, so people who monitor scheme agents, such as iCare and WorkSafe. But this is more focused towards insurers and what they should need to do to do better in this space. Before we jump into it, just a quick understanding of the majority of the audience. The background is in public, state, or private insurers. You can pivot accordingly. State. Public, state, or private, state, or just wanted to get a sense of where should we focus more on private sector insurers or likes of IAG, Suncorp, learnings for them and from them, or should we pivot more towards what public insurers do, likes of iCare and WorkSafe?
Private.
That's good. So let's focus on that. So taking a step back, right, if we were to put a framing or an exam question on why there's a case for change or why we need to act, and taking a step back and looking at not only workers' comp but the whole of insurance sector in general, there's a bit of a trend you see there. So this is a chart which we pulled together from APRA data and looks at insurance performance over the last, since 2003, so quite a 13, 14 years. And what you see there is the return on assets has been progressively going down. So what that would, you can draw many conclusions for it, right? One of them, most obvious ones would be that there is a profitability challenge for the insurers. Now that gets picked up in many different ways, but and comes from, you can have many levers to address it. But at the highest level, we could not argue with ourselves whether, it was a clear case that the returns are going down and it's a problem. You can look at return on risk-based capital, you can look at any measure, but it does seem to call for a case for change. And why that we see that is, I think we all acknowledge that in Australia and other markets, the growth is very minimal. There is a volatility risk as usual, you know, catastrophic events are part of life for insurance. And more importantly, we see a lot of these new entrants, the fintechs, the insurtechs, Lemonade, and again, some of them may not scale, but clearly there's a lot of disruption. And we see a bit of a shift from having a stable mindset of an insurer to now finally recognizing that they need to change. The world is not going to be the same. If you were to ask very cheekily, in 10 years' time, will the current insurers in their current form will exist? Probably not. So the question then becomes, at least for a workers' comp point of view, is that let's understand what is driving the change here. And we have listed four big factors. You could argue that there are others, and some of them could be sort of challenged, but broadly, see, when it comes to workers' comp, we see the first thing around shifting demographics. So the traditional, the picture of a worker in a hard hat in a mining industry is still, as a primary sort of a customer persona, is still right, but it's sort of changing as well. You have more shared economy, the gig economy. You have more service-based industries, and each of these industries will bring a sort of a flavor of the risk and also a different growth opportunity and a cost opportunity for the insurers. So that's one. Related to that is working, the nature of the employment itself, so more of part-time roles, more of shared roles, sort of working from home bases, which are all good things, right? They're all good things from an employer point of view, but from an insurer point of view, they introduce some uncertainty in how you price and assess risk. Then there's a third thing around the whole cost of care. So I think we have heard loud and clear the days of being earlier in the day that you could have bottomless spending from a government side, they are over, right? So there is a cost pressure from a care point of view, and how do you deliver better outcomes? So yes, there's a language of let the customer choose and they can have the better optimal outcome for themselves, as we heard David Bowen say, but it still comes down to there is pressure on the funding available in the care space. And then perhaps the fourth point from a customer side of things is that their expectations are changing, right? So, you know, Anders and I worked in Western Australia for an insurer where they do a lot of paper-based processing for claims. And in our day and age, that still could be right, but you would expect more expectation on having an app, being able to at least do phone-based lodgements, being able to not have to key in or provide the information six times. So there are clearly some things that are shaping the customer expectation from a workers' comp point of view. Which sort of presents, as you would expect, a sort of set of opportunities and challenges for insurers. And that seems to be sort of brought to life if you look at the overall trend in terms of the claims cost on the top left and then the underwriting expenses. So, again, this is no confidential data. It comes from APRA. And we just plotted how workers' comp stacks up against the other, against CTP and then overall. So workers' comp, CTP, being both long tail, go hand in hand. But you could see that when it comes to claims cost across Australia, workers' comp only 2% CAGR, but still a lot of volatility. But when it comes to acquisition and underwriting expenses, claims handling expenses, clearly 11% growth, compounded growth, that's unsustainable. I mean, you could argue that 2% compounded growth in claims costs is perhaps not very significant, but if you, on a percentage basis, that would be right. But if you put the dollars, the billions of spend that goes into it, it's a small basis point improvement makes a big difference. So that's sort of taking a pure economic lens or an efficiency or effectiveness lens out of that. Before I go further, any questions, any observations? So in we consultants love frameworks, so it's a framework for you. But in terms of how we see insurers, if there's a rising cost and a customer imperative, then what should be the ideal approach, and how should we approach the whole profitability and customer outcome issue? So we see this requiring sort of five key building blocks, and they form part of a framework which is we like to call it fit for growth, but in some ways it's a sort of a common sense framework, for a lack of a better word. At the heart of it, from a workers' comp point of view, as a private insurer, the main focus for you needs to be being very clear and deliberate about playing in this space. For some insurers, the loss ratios that we have seen would suggest it's a good product to be in, it's a good business to be in. So being very clear in that, then if this is the product that we believe we should be in, which is in some cases might be different for CTV, for example, in New South Wales, which a lot of insurers ask themselves that the returns are not going to meet their internal hurdle rate, so what they should do. But for workers' comp, by and large, it's seen as a profitable product. So the question is, what then should be our go-to-market strategy around it? So which employer segments we want to target, which sort of what types of risk we want to go after more? Are we doing enough innovation in our market offerings, for example? Are we having a product specific for Uber taxi drivers and related to the injuries that are coming through, if any? So that's sort of a big overarching question. Then that leads into the bit around how do we then build the differentiating capabilities. We're quite surprised looking at a lot of insurers that when it comes to workers' comp and some of these long-tail products, things are, as compared to short tail, motor and home, things are many, many years behind. We were a bit surprised as to why. It is because of the whole nature of the product is as such that it's very hard to, wrap your arms around how claims can be managed in an efficient way. Or is it just that the books end up being very small for the likes of, let's say, an IAG, where there is not enough management attention given to the product? Regardless, there is a clear case for what are the differentiating capabilities that we need and how do we get about getting them. Then, which is related, third thing is related to this whole notion of how we transform the cost structure in a sustainable way. So this is not about short, sharp, rapid improvement to take cost out, but how do you make it a bit more sustainable in the long run? And then, in light of that, how do you invest some of the capital that you free up into growth? So you can argue that there's enough capital in the market chasing insurance, so you don't need to reinvest, but clearly every insurer would not want to go, suddenly and find a lot of growth avenues totally funded outside of their own books. So how do you free up capital to pursue growth in a smart way? And the fifth thing is how do you make it an enduring cultural change? I actually, when I started initially working, I could not wrap my head around why that would be a problem, right? Like, it's a claims, handling claims. Employees would love getting people back on feet. But you still see, I think as we mentioned earlier, there's a process compliance culture as opposed to really good for the customer culture. And really good for the customer does not mean we blow our cost out of the picture, but we did see some challenges on how we make the cultural shift, especially amongst the staff that are really passionate and really devoted. So we'll talk about a bit of a triage model that we put in place at one of the insurers and need to share those learnings. Any questions before we go forward? Or observations, reflections? This is not a presentation back to the industry experts taking coal to Newcastle, but keen to hear any thoughts. I do want to spend time a bit on this space, and that's where I want to probably take more input from you. What good looks like? So there are many. If we are reasonably clear on what, how we want to go about pursuing different avenues, almost reflecting on then what along the insurance value chain, right from how we design our strategy for workers' comp and look broadly, looking at pricing, distribution, lodgement. Again, we have split claims into lodgement and triage, as well as the more classical handling and the return to work outcome. So what does good look like, and what's the call for action for insurers to pick the game around it? So there are a few thoughts here. So just talking about the customer and the strategy side first, as I mentioned very briefly before, stop looking at workers' comp as a one monolithic product. Having worked at the two leading insurers, there is a... If you were to ask them, do you have an accurate customer segmentation for workers' comp? Probably not. Obvious answers that we don't, as an insurer, we don't get to understand the customer, the end customer, till the claims gets lodged, because many times it comes through a broker and there is a reticence amongst the brokers to share customer information because they're rightfully protective about it. And also then you know the employer, but then you don't intimately know the end customer. So there's a case around better insights we get from the end customer, the better we'll be able to offer our product and tailor our claim services. Then, which then leads into defining how do we really take this product to the market. Many cases you see still workers' comp distributed through brokers with a view that brokers would naturally add a lot of value in the process, questionably. So for an insurer, if you were to looking at optimizing the profitability challenge, the question is, do we want to take this product direct, or still we should have this three go through the brokers? So that's a key question, given a broker channel would result in a unique value, but that unique value needs to be very clearly spelled out. Then it goes to having the classic insurer's nirvana single customer view, wanting to know what all the products they have and how do you maximize share of the wallet. So can an insurer then offer a sort of a home policy or a motor policy through a workers' comp so that you can drive a bit of a cross-sell and at the same time hopefully better outcome for the employer or the customer. Then moving on to pricing, there's a good talk about real-time pricing, which I think is in some insurers do it, but for many of them, the big ones, for example, getting a good system in the first place is a challenge. So how do you define, have a system in place, but then you can rapidly move into dynamic pricing or being able to adjust your risk ratings on the fly in a conversation with the broker as you get to know the better, as you get a better handle on the risk for the customer. Then the few rats and mice things around how do you get PDSs in a digital form which sort of improve outcomes. When it comes to distribution, the stuff that we are seeing is around how do you take this more direct. Again, conscious of the broker dynamics in there, so you don't want to lose the book. But then how you also drive more self-service, and when the product gets sold, but how do you get more customers to pick up and do self-service. And probably the two most interesting one I want to spend a bit of time is comes to lodgement and triage. And then how do you then the return to work and how do you get injured claimants better? And I want to spend a bit of time on that. Just if I flick through this page. So that's an example of designing a workers' comp triage model, which you may I think you may have seen in different shapes and forms in your experiences in the industry. We said that when we were helping an insurer, a leading one, a few months back, and we asked them, how do you actually assess your claims? Now, they said, we have a criteria, we really look at different factors, but we really asked them, do you have a handle on the really key factors that drive a subsequent complexity on the claim? Beyond the easy ones, the answer was no. So we set them up to, we did a bit of a CART or multivariate analysis to identify which factors will be better predictors of a claims outcome down the track. And we set about them doing them into two dimensions, a value of the claim on the right, so it's low to high, then what's the risk and the complexity of the claim in the future. And obviously you'll expect a good correlation. The more risky, the more complex, the higher. But the thing that stands out from this is a couple of things. One is, when it comes to figuring out how to deploy your claims agents onto handling claims, most insurers focus on the specialist claims, the complex claims. And I would say it's actually, yes, from a good outcome to injured person point of view, and also the big dollars attached point of view, it's the right thing to do. But you can do very little to influence the cost of the claim if you're only focusing on the specialist claims. It's almost better to say, pay it and forget it. Get the, you know, best outcome for the customer, just don't focus on it. The real value then comes is the light touch or no touch claims, where from an efficiency point of view, you will find a lot of time being spent on chasing a claim which is very small, not likely to blow up, not likely to get represented, sorry for the lawyers in the room. But then how do you really, you know, make it pay the, do a light touch or a no touch payment processing? And the real then complexity and effort that comes in the middle, which is the supported recovery, or we can call it any name you want, where the focus is how do you deploy early triage better. So we designed a simple phone-based survey where he said, really, if you, in 3 to 5 questions, if you ask them in a sensible way, in a non-intrusive way, if your claims agents are very trained to pick it up, you can actually make a very good prediction on the complexity of the claim down the track. So asking things around, how do you love your job? Simple question. Many times they would say yes, but you will figure out some hesitation, some reluctance. So you will see naturally that is a downstream correlation whether the claims cost is going to blow up. There are social, geographic, economic factors, again, which can be used to help assess the potential claims reward. So what we did in this case was take a mix of, whether you call it a human-centered design or behavioral factors, as well as a hardcore claims factors to see how the claims would flow out. In some of the more classic sort of hard factors would be soft tissue injury. We heard before, soft tissue injury is huge predictor of downstream complexity, hard to fix, take a long time. But that was sort of a going in as common assumption. But what really surprised us was the mental illnesses. So how do you take a workers' comp claim, or for that matter a CTP claim, where there's a sort of a psychological injury involved? Many times psychological injury is actually a secondary injury, it's not the primary injury. So how do you get to know that earlier, and how do you then triage it to the most capable teams within your business is sort of the secret trick there. The other one on this we looked at was early access to allied health providers. So somebody, I think, I can't remember, who in the earlier plenary made a observation that just pay it out, and we are not an expert, and we saw that here. We, simple as that, like if there is a person which comes through a sort of relatively simple injury, let's say a back sprain, instead of having them to wait 21 days, the insurer that we worked for said, look, we're going to get some fraud, we know that, But right at the outset, we're going to give you a $500 physio voucher. Go and get 4 or 5 sessions of physio done. It's taking a leap of faith, big leap of faith for them to say, oh, everybody will now start getting physios for 500. But the results were quite surprising, very positive. So it has a real correlation on how injury gets. Early treatment really helps the downstream cost of the claim. So few more sort of things we did in here that really helped. So coming back to this then is the handling side. Two of the insurers we worked in, they had their small legal and medical provider teams in-house to help the claims consultants. But if you would ask them, were they being used effectively, the answer was no. So in many instances, insurers would look to have IMA or dedicated medical professionals helping the claims agents, but the very rarely or very not very often you found them being utilized to the best extent. So how do you take a medical practitioner and create the right incentives around them so that they are involved in helping in a efficient way to the sort of a generic claims agent so that they can get the medical side in quickly. So insurers are not doctors, insurers are not meant to be treatment providers, but at least having the right skills in the mix really helps. Similarly, having the best lawyers to face up into a claim where at least there's a sort of understanding of different negotiation tactics before you ask your claims agent to face into a lawyer. So there are a few things that they could do to really use the specialist skill sets to help processing of the claims. And that really helps in a claims cost outcome point of view. Won't go through the sort of differentiating or key capabilities. We spoke a few of them a bit earlier. There are a couple of them I wanted to sort of highlight. One thing which was very fascinating for us is in terms of leveraging scale, for a big insurer, what's the appetite for using the same claims handling staff for processing CTP and also workers' comp claims? Normally, you would find them, they have silo teams for a good reason. So you would not find CTP claims handling processing workers' comp claims, even though the nature of the injury is pretty, bodily injury is a bodily injury, right? So whether you slip on a banana peel or you get hit by a car, in some cases the manifestation of the injury tends to be very similar. So the question is, if we are dealing with bodily injury, can we create some sort of centers of excellence across our different product classes? There's an element of regulation that we need to understand. The regulation in workers' comp in WA is fantastically different from in New South Wales and then in ACT. And then if you are adding CTP on top of it, the poor guy processing claims will lose it, right? Like, how would he know one claim is, what are the regulatory complexities with one versus the other? So, but there's a merit in pushing that argument. So one of the insurers we worked with is trying to establish a center of excellence around soft tissue injury, around different types of injuries, so that they can share learnings and best practices across different state-based and product-aligned teams. So it's a leap of faith, which is sort of this model we are showing here, where they had, in the current state, teams which were handling CTP, workers' comp, liability, PRI claims. And then in the target state, backed by a good system, they're trying to then move on to more of a breaking of the silos and have sort of lodgement, for example, being done across all classes. This is a big shift. So a single team for long-tail products. We're not mixing home and motor insurance here, but long-tail products, being able to lodge claims for all classes with aid of a good, obviously, system, whether it's Guidewire or Choose Your Adventure, any other system, but having the ability to lodge through a single team. Similarly, coding, if you've, you know, initial time spent in coding times is a well worth the effort. So how do you have a single coding team which, and then similarly then fast track low touch claims. But what we found is a core or a major claim, you may want to keep them still a bit siloed till the time that your teams are well placed. That's the bell. So we have 5 more minutes for me to wrap up before we do for questions. And the last thing we spoke briefly was around cultural change. And this goes to the whole notion of there doesn't need to be a single pathway. You can have claims agents who are specialists in one, but that's not for everyone. The success is not to become the most complex claims agent, the guy who handles the most complex claim or the girl. It's about how do you incentivize them in the right way with the right metrics, so that for the fast track guys, it's about how do you get the efficiency, or it's a measure of throughput in there. For the specialist guys, a question of effectiveness and as opposed to efficiency. So how do you design a model with a right career progression based upon right customer focus and bit of a clear KPIs and metrics behind that? Pausing here. Wanted to open some questions, please. Please, thank you. Thank
you. Thank you, Asish and Anders, for an interesting paper. I was just wondering if, in your experience, looking at some insurers who do have workers' comp and CTP, if you've had any, seen any really good examples of them doing parts or elements of your framework, and if you can able to share that with us.
We have worked with 2 of the leading ones. I won't be able to share their names, but you can draw your own inferences. There are only 3 or 4 key ones. So they did the one that I spoke about where you're just finishing a project where you used it. And we could report back in a few months' time on the benefits. But we have done the CTP first, and we're now doing workers' comp. And in CTP, we are seeing the benefits. I can't quantify whether it's, but our ambition was to have 20% reduction in efficiency. Which mostly results in from claims per FT going up from 80, from coming down, claims per FT going from 80 to 100 odd. So that sort of results in a bottom line impact.
So what element of your framework was most useful in achieving that?
So it's a combination of the fit for growth. If I just draw back, it talks about 5 things. Most insurers want to directly go to the middle one. Transform the cost.
Yeah.
It makes sense, right? Because bottom line pressure. But what we found is the trick is doing this all together. Because if you take cost and you don't build a capability, very soon, in six months' time, because of some reasons, you start adding back more capacity to handle claims. If you don't put fixed culture, you end up again losing benefits in a 6 months or a year's time. So doing this all together, it seems to be the way to go.
Yeah. Okay, I think is there any other questions? I think we might be just right on time. So we've had a lot of time.
Thank you.
So if you join me in thanking Anders and Asish. Thank you.